Good morning, folks. Happy Friday, and welcome back. And hope everyone had a wonderful feast of unleavened bread for those that are probably within a day or so at least of finishing things up at this point on that score. In any case, it's also time to take a look back at a week where a lot going on. I guess you could say, given the holidays and so forth, it was a bit slower than it might have been. But no shortage of news, especially when it comes to the things that are being destroyed deliberately. So let me just say, let's talk about it, and welcome David Justice back again. How are you doing, David?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I've been a little distracted this week. I'm heavily involved on the election integrity front, so the people I'm running with and are developing some ideas to, you know, to get up the front line of that issue. And anyway, so you're going to have to lead me. I guess I know a few things, but, you know, you go ahead and report the news, and I'll comment best I can. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just start off with what you mentioned. Is there anything you can tell us on the election integrity front? It's an ironic name, because I guess the reason you have to have the worry about it is because there isn't any. But go ahead.
Well, what we've learned, and, you know, what the courts won't hear, because all these cases that have been brought, they get dismissed out for lack of standing, or the court will come up with some preliminary issue to where we never get to the merits of the actual complaint.
Sure.
So all of the lawsuits that have been brought in some way deal with corrupt voter rolls, corrupt machine tallies, corrupt XYZ involved in the election system. Carrie Lake, of course, here a couple weeks ago got a ruling back from the Arizona Supreme Court. They ruled that she could have the voter envelope so that they could do some signature verification. But when she got back to Maricopa County, they said, "Nah, we're not going to give those to you."
Surprise.
So we've got, you know, we've got syndicate level corruption going on. The people that are investigating literal syndicate, and I'm talking about mafia type, you know, racketeering, criminal organization using the instrumentalities of government to pursue a mob rule. And I'm not talking about what many call democracy. I'm talking about literal mobocracy, which, you know, AKA Marxism. So there's a lot of that going on, and they've commandeered the electoral system. And so if this election integrity is not restored, then, there's nothing left because they've stolen our voice. And so it is time for a revolution, but the revolution right now is in the mind, and we're exhausting all of our administrative and legal remedies as best we can before this thing could ultimately come down to a shooting war, which is what they want, which is why we can't go there. We've got to do everything in our power to prevent it from going there. So there's an update.
All right. Well, that's a good way to put it, because ultimately the way I would have phrased what we've seen for the last certainly a decade or more, but certainly the last 2 years plus, and even before that, the only difference was back when Trump did manage to win the election, it was by such a landslide majority that they couldn't fudge it. But what we've seen literally is an attempt to say the elections don't matter, right, with the deep state, which is unelected, and ultimately we're going to control the elected offices and the bureaucracy and those things like the ATF, the various litter agencies that are unconstitutional to begin with. We're going to make sure that the elections don't matter. But on the other hand, now we've seen the situation where, just in case, they're going to rig the elections to where it doesn't matter how you vote. So on both ends, we've seen this thing pretty well taken over. And you're right. It is demonocracy. It's just that the demons are running the mob.
There are so many vulnerabilities in this mechanical electoral internet web of voter and election fraud. And this is something that's been coming about. All of the people, there's a lot of good people doing a lot of good research trying to come up with a strategy as to how we use the law, because our side is about law and order. And so we're pursuing the slow turtle pace of, you know, crossing our T's and dotting the I's and building cases. And it's as though we using the rule of law have a disadvantage over this other side because they're more prone to chaos and they're lawless. And so our biggest problem is it takes time and it takes a lot of effort to put together good cases, legitimate cases, and as distinguished from our enemies who could care less about the law more.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about some of the other things, I guess, on the could care less about the law front. The word fire was big in the news this last week. We had 18,000 cows that were killed at a fire at what else? Another food processing facility, a place where milking was going on, because I guess dairy is also on the list of the proteins and things that people are going to be prohibited here in the near future. And then we had a huge fire in Indiana at a plastics plant that has sent yet more dioxin into the atmosphere. And I'm looking at one of the stories here. I'm going to just check it. I didn't even look at this before. Okay, yep, it does. This one does from Robert F. Kennedy's organization, the Children's Health Defense, the Defender. They do mention dioxins, but most of the waste stream doesn't. But in any case, what we're seeing is a looks certainly more like acts of terrorism, given all the cells that have come in across the southern border unimpeded and scattered themselves throughout the country, or at least had help doing it. None of this should be a surprise, but when you see, 18,000 cows killed at a dairy fire along with one other individual person that was in there, you gotta figure, it is merely the tip of the spear, yet another example of what we've seen so many of over the last couple of years, but they've definitely accelerated.
Well, you know, what this story says to me in three simple letters is WAR, war. We're at war, and these are acts of war. You call them terrorism, okay? So the people that hate law and order, they use tactics like burning chickens or burning they want to disrupt the food production and the food distribution because they're going to use starvation as a weapon of war. And so we're at war, and these are assaults it's the way they're engaging us in war. And of course they do it undercover, you know, masks and darkness so that we can't see, but it's still an act of war nonetheless, Mark.
And I guess that's the thing that we continue to want to make sure we emphasize and discuss here as we go through some of the other news this morning. It's a war against the creator of the universe first and foremost, and against all of those who are attempting to follow and to walk in obedience, and finally just anybody who even understands exactly what it is that they're fighting. All of these things on a front that I guess as we think about the spring feast that we're in, we're counting down the Omer at this point towards the next one. It does look like we see turning points, and here's one of them as we enter this upcoming season. What can you say other than be prepared?
Well, yeah, you know, denial is the most predictable of all human responses, and so. Those of us that are in denial, then the first place you go after you accept is anger. And so we've got denial. And then what we're looking at is the stages of grief. And I think a lot of people are shocked that the things could actually be this way. And so inside their denial or anger, they still haven't come to accept the reality that, folks, we are at war against an evil force who at the center of their universe is human sacrifice and pedophilia and child and human trafficking and all these things. And that's what they're protecting, and that's what we're at war against. We're at war against the evil results of an agenda that desires to control every thought, word, and deed of our being. And they're going to use AI. They're going to use the internet. They want to use a new currency, a digital bank currency. That's where it's going. And so how do we respond when we finally reach a place where we can accept that we're at war? Well, the first thing we need to do is prepare. Prepare your heart, soul, mind, and get prepared. Get in a community of people that you like and get to know each other and get ready for some tough times, because that's what war brings, is tough times. And so best thing to do is get ready to go through it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another couple of stories that I think will help to flesh out the war front. Now, this one's almost funny. The Bud Light fallout continues. They put their transgender on the cover of the can. Basically, let's have a can that will show the rednecks that we're going to shove this down their throat, literally in this case. And what was funny was the fallout, because we saw lots of people. We talked about this last week. Kid Light and others shooting up beer cans and just saying, you know, we've had it with Bud. But evidently, they had huge losses, and I've seen numbers on the order of $6 billion. That it cost Anheuser-Busch to have their politically correct little temper tantrum. Unfortunately, it's probably not enough, because it's not going to put them out of business, and you can probably rest assured that, on the other hand, they'll be getting the money elsewhere from the propagandists and those that'll cover their back and make sure that whatever happens here, the politically correct companies aren't going to suffer for what they're trying to do as part of the war on the American people.
You know, I got a chance to take a look at the CEO of Bud Light. She video online, or I don't know how it got online, but it was her talking to a friend or an associate. And the thing that struck me about this was her absolute ignorance. She was a totally woke individual, about 39 years old, very excited about her counselor, her, I would call, a handler, at how she's engaging in the world. I really think that what we're looking at on the Bud Light front is total incompetence of the CEO. If I'm right, they're going to fire her, because it won't be much. I don't think Bud can last that much longer, given the way that they've lost their.
Was it one of the CEO? Or I thought it was one of the high level marketing people that had done this, but maybe you're right. I know I saw parts of the interview, and you know, to say politically correct nutcase, and you could just look at the picture of this woman and basically see that she's the kind of stereotypical thing that you'd find on the Boulder Mall. No surprise there, but I didn't think it was the CEO, but never mind. I mean, it's equally true. I also saw some other stories, and I haven't confirmed this one, saying that others of Anheuser-Busch's top-level marketing were trying to claim that this was done by junior staffers, and they didn't know about it. So ultimately, the story is swathed in the usual lies, trying to cover up for what they richly deserve, which is bankruptcy.
Well, if they have control of the narrative, they can tell us anything we want, because they used the techniques of mind control and propaganda whenever they want to promote or demote anything. They rely on fake news. They rely on a fake propaganda, because, you know, it's not in them to tell the truth, Mark.
Okay. Well, no surprise there. I certainly support those that are suggesting that whether it's beer, for those that like this stuff. I'm not a big beer fan. I've never really managed to get over the taste of it is the trouble. But there are other products that you can use and people you can purchase from. I did see a story about a small town brewery that has tried to capitalize on the move here by saying, hey, we're going to sell Patriot beer and 100% not woke and no woke ingredients and all that kind of jazz. So at least on the other side, if we had a free market, and there are those that are trying to at least put some of those things in place, people would have choices, and they'd say, okay, we're going to try to send a message by simply buying what we want, not buying the crap we don't want, and not participating with it. It's part of the come out of her understanding. The trouble, of course, is, and I've got another story sitting here in front of me about the mass corporate suicides. Go woke, broke, go broke. Everybody's heard this. Bud Light, Victoria's Secret, Old Navy, Coca-Cola, Nike, Disney, Adidas, Kellogg, so many more pushing the woke agenda. And unfortunately, they're not suffering enough.
We stopped having a free market, and you know this. We haven't seen a free market in our lifetime. This is a private central banking cartel that runs the world. And as long as you play by their rules, as long as you sell to the degree that you sell your soul, is the degree that you'll be successful. And I think everybody's going along to get along inside this woke agenda, thinking that that's what you're supposed to do. And so it's not true capitalism. It's not true free thinking. It's not true laissez-faire. It's not true Mises Institute type, you know, money. Let it go and let the market dictate. Now, this is a private central Western banking system, and with one agenda in mind, and that's to control. And to the degree that you go along, you get along, and I think that that's why everybody's blindly following this whole fake narrative about wokeism, Mark.
Okay. Well, let's change gears just a little bit. We'll talk about a couple of the other things that are, I would say, interesting signs of the time. Let me put it that way. And I was going to save this story, but I think we can pitch it out up front. There's a communist that was not elected, but managed to be shoved into office in Brazil, Lula da Silva. And he has kicked off, surprise, surprise, get this, his first state visit to China with a BRICS bank event in which he called for even that communist nation to move away from the almighty fiat dollar. Speaking on Shanghai on Thursday during an official visit, Lula said the BRICS group, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, should look for an alternative currency to the dollar in trade. So even the leftists are realizing that there's something that needs to, and that's, it's funny if you think about it, because you'd figure that, Lula would love the other Chinese communists and their little satellite state here in Washington. But evidently, the word has come down that nope, we're going to have a split. That leads me to another story. I'll go into it in just a second. But comment away if you'd like.
Well, this is very simple. This is very simple. With honest weights and measures, okay. The good news here, let's find the silver lining, is because of the fallout of the monetary system and because we're watching the literal house of cards tremble because of the weakness of the so-called dollar. Remember, it's a Federal Reserve note worth a dollar, but it's a private monetary system, and the truth of this monetary system is that it does not represent an honest measure. Okay, for example, you turn the printing presses on and you create $110 billion to send to Ukraine. That diminishes the value of each one of those dollars in circulation. When you get up to $30 trillion of currency or cash or M1 or whatever you want to label it, then each dollar, so-called Federal Reserve note, diminishes in value, which causes the of goods and services to rise, and they call that inflation. Or do they call that deflation? I don't know. But whatever
deflation is when it dries up.
Right. We watch the gas prices go up, or we watch the bread go up, or milk, or whatever. But the result is not that those are going up. The cause is that the value of the currency is going down. It gets to the point throughout history, and you can, support me on this, it always crashes. It's the end of the private monopoly, a network marketing monetary system. It runs out of ability to grow. And so what they want to do is now hide that into a digital currency so that they have total control. Mark, go ahead.
Well, and you're right. There has never been a fiat currency in human history, not one. And the dollar is one of the longest lives so far, but it's on its last legs, that has survived long term. They have all, every single one of them ultimately collapsed. Perhaps one of the most famous, Rome, which took several hundred years to completely devalue the denarius. It was originally a silver coin, and they just kept adding more pot metal. And then later on, of course, you know, come the modern era, they realized, no, we don't even have to add pot metal. Matter of fact, now we don't even have to print it at all. You can just keep doing it, and people are, they're stupid. We can fool them for quite a while. And therein lies the rub. Now, one of the interesting things, of course, is that the devaluation does take a while. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say let's really focus on this because this is a significant topic as we transition into the other side of whatever it is we're getting ready to go through. Shaving coins, debasing money, true money. Was it at one time in history a death penalty? This is how serious counterfeiting is, which is essentially what we're talking about. It's legalized counterfeiting inside of a private system. And it's, the reason it's legal is because they who are in control of the issuance of this currency get to dictate what is and isn't law. So they're redefining reality, these sophists. You know, who make law are just the puppets who then accommodate the bankers, which are really in business to control so that they can have more control and power. And, you know, money is the means to that end. And so, you know, the death penalty was what I wanted to bring up to really put an emphasis on the significance of this conversation.
Okay, well, a couple, I mean, there's so many things there, and we've done some of this before, but, and I've certainly talked about it for years as well. I usually start by pointing out that what we have is no longer a, you know, the Bible talks about honest weights and measures. If I promise somebody an ounce of silver, I should give them a full ounce, not nine-tenths of an ounce or whatever. But what we have in the dollar is not even a weight anymore. It used to be defined in terms of so many grains of silver, hasn't been for years. And you're right, I think the term counterfeiting is kind of funny because it is a as close as you still can get in the United States anymore to a constitutional crime. And ultimately, if you think about it, since there's no power for the Fed to even exist, and there never was a power in the Constitution to print money, they could print notes and they could issue debt based on something, but what we have anymore is not even a legitimate note. So it's literally a counterfeit. It's just that it's a counterfeit done under color of law. So ha-ha, ain't it funny? The legal counterfeiters are the ones that are doing the massive counterfeiting. Now, we mentioned that these things always come apart at the seams, and as we go to break, we've only got about a minute here. I think it's important to point out Ludwig von Mises, and you mentioned the Mises Institute, named for him. Years and years ago came up with the term that economists will use to describe what happens when the generally dumb public finally figures out they've been had. And Mises called it the crack-up boom. And the question is, when's it going to happen? How close are we? Certainly there are people that are already awakened. I hope most of our audience is realizing this. And that point comes, said Mises, when the average Joe looks in his wallet and realizes, hey, the money that's in there is never, ever going to be as valuable, never going to buy as much, not going to be worth as much tomorrow or even an hour from now as it is right now. It's never going to be worth as much in the future as it is at this instant. So now what? I better get rid of it. I like the game Old Maid. You got to get rid of the Old Maid, and that's exactly what would happen. And when the generally dumb public figures that out, then, as Mises put it, you know, the jig is up. And the currency will collapse. We see hyperinflation. Right now what we're seeing is inflation. That means more and more people are awakening to the fact that they're printing this stuff. It's just not gone over the cliff. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's make a really important distinction here between money and currency because we're conflating the two ideas.
No, yeah,
I'd like
you're right.
Separate
we don't
those
want
two
to.
Ideas. We'll do that on the other side.
Yep.
Tonight.
Welcome back to the second segment of Drive Time Freddy. And as we went to break, we were talking about money, and David made an excellent point, and I'll emphasize this and then go back over to him, let him continue. But anyway, currency and money are definitely not the same thing. Money is actually has several characteristics according to all the economic theory, but one of them is that it's a store of value. It's actually worth something, whereas currency may or may not be. Currency is just a representation that, hey, maybe there's some money somewhere, and maybe this is worth trading for it, but it's not necessarily. And once people figure out the not necessarily part, the currency is no longer a store of value.
You know, Solomon in Ecclesiastes said that money is the answer to all things. The first time you read that, I just got like, what? The love of money is the root of all evil. And so we've got a private system where how did it get to be private? So somewhere in history, okay, we can deduce that it's the reason it's private is because somebody's in control of it. And they claim a right to be in control of it, but the question comes from by whose right do they control it? This country is founded on the principle that, you know, the source of power comes from the people who comes from our Father. Anyway, inside that power is an inherent power of being in control of the means of exchange. The currency is the medium of exchange, and so people can exchange money for currency, or they can exchange another form, which is the Federal Reserve note, and it has a term $1 on it. That's a unit of measurement like pound or ounce.
Except it's not.
You know, kilogram. Yeah.
It's
anyway, so go ahead.
It's a dimensionless quantity. That's the question I ask. You can tell me what an inch is. Most people can tell you about how long it is. There are standards at the National Bureau of Standards for a kilogram and a pound. And, you know, physicists can describe what they are and what the units measure. In the case of a dollar, literally, it no longer has any meaning whatsoever. What's a dollar? What's it buy? What's it worth? What's its weight in silver? Answer, I don't know, because it's not a unit of anything. It's just a dimensionless quantity.
And so it becomes a token. The Federal Reserve note becomes a token, and its only value is that we believe in it. It's backed by the full faith and credit of
what
the
do you give me today?
United States. Well, that means that to the degree that we believe in it, it has some purchasing power. But when we stop believing in it, that's when the real problem happens, and that's one of the biggest secrets they don't want us to find out as a people, is that thing in their pocket is actually worthless. Because if they lose faith, because, you know, there was certainty in that thing that I was trusting in to be there, when people lose that, that's the end of and that's why these things crash. It's the end of the belief system in that narrative they call money. But it's not.
All right. Well,
relative to an honest way to measure if it was money. Go ahead.
let's talk about some of the other things, because ultimately what we're seeing here is a system that is being revealed as a lie, and that's why we have the breakdown coming. But it's kind of fascinating because one of the questions people always want to ask is, well, how long, right? If I've got quote-unquote money that I think is mine, but it's in the bank, so it's really not mine, I'm just an unsecured creditor, can I get it out of the bank? Well, you might want to hurry if that's the case, because you don't know how much longer it's going to last. You don't know whether the bank is quote-unquote solvent or not. And what does solvency mean in a nation where big lies are all that matters? Answer, not much. You can't trust it. So what can you do, right? I can turn it into something real while I can. Now, the other indicators are the fact that things are coming apart at the seams. Here's one. I thought this was kind of funny. The story I first saw was on AmericanMilitaryNews.com, and it came from Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. And he said the following. Basically, they had subpoenaed some bank records from a communist Chinese bank. It's a Los Angeles-based branch, American bank controlled by communist China, Cathay Bank. And they were requesting records about the Biden Fuhrer and the crooked son Hunter and the whole crime family. And the Cathay Bank actually released the records after the request from Ron Johnson and Charles Grassley. The records show large payments from Chinese state-owned company or companies flowing through the Biden regime. You know, I guess the big guy's getting his 10% right off the top and his accounts while Biden was running for, you know, the current dictator position before he was shoved into office in spite of the vote totals. And the findings, according to the records discovered in Grassley and Johnson's investigation, have been disclosed, some of them, by lawmakers. The regime denies any involvement. And meanwhile, this is the thing I think is funny. This is the reason why the story is noteworthy. Said Johnson, speaking of the latest development here, in my mind, this is the communist Chinese government telling Joe Biden, we got the goods on you, buddy, and we're willing to dish it up, he told the Washington Times.
The funniest part of this story is that these people are so stupid that Joe Biden would leave a paper trail. Okay, he's going to commit this treason. And he's going to let us connect the dots to him. See, that's delusional. That's drunk. No one is that stupid unless they've been drinking or maybe they're intoxicated on power. They get all this power and then they do. Scripture says that they do go delusional. There's into powerful delusion. And so only delusional people would leave a paper trail like that. Go ahead, Mark.
I think part what you're describing here is just the drunk with power thing. They are so cocky that they think, look, I can steal an election. I can get away with anything. I can, Hunter, the stupid fool that he was, Hunter can leave his laptop at a computer store and not pay for it. And it gets out. We can cover that up. We own the press. We own the people. People are stupid. I can rub their noses in it. Ha ha. And what can they do about it? So literally what we're seeing here is just a case where the power is so out of control that they think there's no point in even hiding it anymore. That I think is a.
But
is,
for the most part, they're right. That's the scary part.
Yep.
Go ahead. Yeah, throw it.
All right. Well, let's talk about a couple of other things. There was a North Korean missile that was launched over Japan this week, and missile warnings in Hokkaido and the Northern Islands. Get out of here. Big concerns. So those kinds of threats continue. The other indicators that things are coming apart at the seams. Now we hear about the World Health Organization. I've got a story like that. But this one is another one that when I saw this, my eyebrows kind of went up. Another blow to the so-called intelligence community in the United States. And there's an irony. Ponder that. The names of various CIA operatives. Now this once would have been considered a big deal. And we also saw the other story this week about all these documents that were released by whom. We're not sure, but they're going to blame a 21-year-old kid for it. Looks like. Anyway, names of CIA operatives in Ukraine and Russia have now been released, unmasked, on a well-known internet message board. And Russian FSB agents are effectuating arrests, even as you read this, said Hal Turner's coverage of it. This is an unmitigated disaster for the intelligence community. We've seen movies, TV shows about these kinds of things before, but now this looks like a really big one, and this time it's real.
You know, you're familiar with the Clive and Bivens plan, right?
The couple of professors,
I can't tell you.
Cloward Piven, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah. The idea was proposed, a couple of university professors proposed,
Clivens
and Pivens is their names, proposed that if you can overwhelm a system, you can take it over by overwhelming the system. I'm feeling overwhelmed right now, like, The so many things are happening on so many fronts, and it's really incompetence, or it's ignorance, or it's evil. And the result is the same, though. And so we're living inside this tsunami that God just keeps wanting to breach, and it doesn't. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, let me throw another story out here. Then splintered court ruling throws January 6th prosecution into chaos. As if we didn't have enough indications that the other fake place was the so-called court system, the rule of law. And now we've got even more information coming out about how January 6th was a setup. There are tons and tons of agent provocateurs that were there. Notice, by the way, that the video that was released to Tucker Carlson has never come out. But at least when the when things actually get into the courts, and that's part of the reason why, obviously, they have been delaying, haven't been going into the courts, the cases fall apart, too. I think we're going to see the same thing with the bogus prosecution of Trump. What it's saying is not only is the money a fake, not only is the Biden Fuhrer a fake, and the criminality there so obvious, but even the whole stinking court system. Every time we see more indications of what's really going on, it's a fake.
So I understood that Trump did a 7-hour deposition yesterday for a civil trial or pretrial, and he talked during that thing. He eviscerated the Marxist judicial system. He says that they've weaponized the justice system, and that he promises when he gets back in that he's going to be appointing prosecutors that are exactly opposite of the current Marxist prosecutors. And so he's promising to fix the federal district court system, Mark.
Well, the question, of course, is twofold. A, could he do so even if he wanted to? And B, and I think this is at least an interesting question, quite frankly, I was disappointed for a whole bunch of reasons. The bump stock ban that said he doesn't understand what shall not be infringed means. Any number of other places where Trump could have done more and failed. Obviously, he could have pardoned all the January 6th people before he left office. He certainly didn't do that. And now it looks like, and by the way, probably the biggest failure, I would say, of his whole first administration was that he turned the reins over to a criminal, knowing full well that the election was rigged. Why would you do that? Why not simply fight the battle then rather than allowing it to come apart at the seams?
It's a sting operation. I think it's entirely possible. Okay, first of all, let me lay a foundation. First of all, Trump's got an ego the size of, you know, Manhattan.
Yeah.
And he does not like to lose, especially with the last name of Trump, okay? So I just have a real, real difficult time, you know, thinking that this egotistical, big personality, not used to losing type guy with Trump as the last name, he doesn't really plan on going anywhere. And I've been watching this guy now for the last couple of years, and he's always on attack. He never backs off. And so I think he is the most credible threat, if there's ever been one, to challenging this system that has risen up around us. It takes this kind of a forehead of flint to really engage these people in any meaning and effectable way.
Well, what
and
you're
so
saying
is that battering ram. And
what you're saying, and I could almost go this far at least. And to me, this is probably one of the more interesting things to watch play out. This thing with Trump battling Letitia James for 7 hours, and that is having been through the mill and having seen it and having recognized what's been going on. Is Trump this time around gonna do a better job than he did last time around? In other words, is he gonna make sure he doesn't allow the Faucis and the Bill Barrs and the scumbags like that to go and do again what they did to him the first time? Or has he learned his lesson? And, you know, will he have the enough power and enough chutzpah? He's got some chutzpah, especially when it comes to ego, to actually do something. I would say the jury's out on that. But again, I caution people, if you expect that your salvation is going to come from the swamp and from New York City, no, the Mashiach comes from a whole different direction. So don't lose sight of that as well. But nevertheless, David, I watch it with interest simply because, if nothing else, the battle here, at least the smokescreen, the so-called battle, is something that is in fact waking more and more people up. And as we see all the other things coming apart at the seams, then whether or not it's Trump that actually does anything, people are figuring that there's something horribly wrong, and they're starting to at least realize they better pay attention.
So I think that as Biden and Hillary and Obama, as they were spying on Trump during the course of his administration, that tells me that it's entirely possible to do that. The question is whether you get caught or not. And so far, they've done a real good job of not being caught, even though there's evidence. And yeah, it's a bizarre thing to watch where they have evidence, but they don't play the card. And it's like very anticlimactic, you know. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it doesn't drop. So I think it's entirely possible that all of this stuff appears to be coming to a head. And I think Trump, when he left, you know, right before he left, actually it was May, he declared that the whole COVID thing was the greatest attack on this country since Pearl Harbor. You know, and 9/11, and he compared it to that. And only this one, because it's an invisible enemy, you know, you can't really, and they're using that whole mind, persuading us in our mind that it's all dangerous, and it's all about the narrative sales that they sold to us. And, he's attacking it. Let me opt for this. I think if he's still in the game, he's attacking it mentally, and it's a mental war. We talk about it on this show. It's a war of the imaginations. It's a new type of war. Deception at its best is what it is. And so the only thing that can be deception at its best is truth at its best. So if anything, this is giving us an opportunity to stand, and I think that may be the whole agenda. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, well, let me throw out one other sign of the times, and we've talked about this story. You mentioned the silent killer. I have a suspicion the silent killer is the injection that are being put into the arms of these the guinea pigs, the wannabe guinea pigs. However, here's a story that ought to raise some eyebrows too. We got a lot of eyebrow raisers, it seems, of late. This week, this is from the Gateway Pundit, Jim Hoft, one high school in the Denver area, and there's PC Central in Colorado, was forced to close after not one, not two, but three mysterious deaths of teachers, ages from 24 to 63 years old, have passed away in the last week, two of them within 24 hours. Get this, and these sudden and unexpected deaths were, quote, apparently from natural causes and unrelated. But they closed the school anyway. So isn't that amazing? I can't imagine anything, can you, that would have caused the deaths of politically correct school teachers that probably were mandated. I don't have the information here saying absolutely for sure, but if you give at least partial credit to Denver and the political correctness, you can guess. What do you think? The odds are 95% that they were all poison poked, updated, and boosted?
People went and got their vax, which came in batches. All right, so a particular hospital gets a batch. And these batches are all numbered. You can go online and find the number of
how bad
batch
is my batch? Yep.
And you can find out if it was a saline shot. And I know that when they clump like that, they went to the same clinic. Or the clinic brought a batch, you know, to the school. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if another three to, you know, however many teachers got vaxxed, if they fall. But then, you know, they weren't stupid in this too. They intermingled the shots so that there was a random sampling of like you said, guinea pigs that they can now observe, but they're keeping all, it's the batch numbers. That's the means by which they count and know how much control, in their demolition of using the vax, they'll know how effective it was. It's a new weapon. It's a freaking bioweapon.
It is, and you're right. One of the things that I've always found fascinating ever since they started rolling this out was And I asked the question, having a background in testing and large scale systems evaluation and feedback loops and all that kind of stuff. If I was evil and wanted to do this, how would I roll it out? And the answer is, it's real simple. Even if you don't understand the math and the statistical sampling processes, you can say to yourself, well, if I put this poison in every single batch and everybody that takes it just drops over immediately, well, even the most stupid are going to figure that out. How about if I put a half of it in a batch? Well, likewise, half the people die. That's a pretty high number. They're going to figure it out sooner rather than later. But how about if I mix it up and I know which batches are deadly, or which batches have this factor or that factor? And we actually designed experiments. I worked with one of the IBM, well, the IBM corporate chief statistician for years. Brilliant man. And who had written the book, literally. I have his book on how you do exactly these kinds of experiments, how you track the data, build what are called Hadamard matrices, and pass this stuff out. You're right, David. This is exactly what they did. They ran a designed experiment on the American population, indeed the world, and they put out poison. They mixed it with non-poison, with placebos, different things than the different shots, all of which are designed to say, hey, we want to kill a lot of people, but we also want to gather a lot of data while we're at it, and we want to also try to make sure that they don't figure it out until it's way too late. And at the point where you decide, okay, now we can put these genetic bombs in people, they'll explode later. We're still waiting to see how that one's going to drop. Go ahead.
Well, I couldn't have said it better. It sounds like you recited that a few times. No, I couldn't have said it better. But the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but spiritual, for the tearing down of strongholds, okay? This is one of those strongholds that needs to be torn down, and that's what prompted the people to take that stupid vaccine in the first place. Well, it was a scenario about a pandemic that was started over in China. What started over in China? It was the narrative itself that is the pandemic. The narrative is the pandemic, and we've got a narrative pandemic on this planet. But the woke people are the fruition of that narrative, and all of the things that are going on right now, they're the fruition of that narrative. And so once we distinguish that and separate ourselves and work to understand it, we find ourselves that the only way we can do that is by wanting to know the truth. And the more I know about truth, the less I realize I know, Mark.
Well, let me throw out one other story. We've got about a minute and a half, and I think this is a great way to cap things off. This also comes from the Gateway Pundit, Alicia Powell. A new report published by the Center for Deadly Control, Center for Death and Contamination, CDC, there's a three-letter agency for you, has now said, they've admitted, the rate of suicide among youth in the United States rose to unbelievable levels, showing a 4% jump, which is statistically unbelievable, huge, from 2020 through 21, the sharpest yearly increase in 20 years, and almost 50,000 young Americans took their lives in 2021, and blah, blah, blah. Suicide is now the second leading cause of death among Americans aged 10 through 34, 11th leading cause overall. And essentially, think about it. Of course, taking the poison poke is kind of like staking suicide, or at least playing Russian roulette to begin with. They're saying, oh, well, you know, it has to do with the job losses during the COVID pandemic and the isolation and these other things. Yeah, and it also has to do with people realizing my body doesn't work. I've taken enough of this crap that I have no immune system. I now have myocarditis, pericarditis. I have some mental problem that I never had before. I don't know what's going on, but I think I'll just end it all rather than watching it play out. I've got a fast-growing cancer. And ideally, and I guess wonderfully, if you're one of those that are pulling the experimental strings here, suicide is a great excuse, because sudden and unexpected death, yeah, that could have been suicide. And ironically, it's not even all that untrue. Go ahead, David, take us out.
Well, okay, so the cause and effect here, okay, the cause of the suicide was buying into the narrative that he was told is true, real, honest, genuine. And so he bought into that reality. The result of buying into that reality in these people's lives was suicide. So suicide is the result. So suicide is the buying into the narrative to the degree that we buy into it. And it fails us is the degree that...
All right. Well, that does it for today. Takes us to the top of the hour. So thanks again, David. Thanks, folks. Shabbat Shalom.